This episode is brought to you by Bumble. So you want to find someone you're compatible with, specifically someone who's ready for a serious connection, totally open to having kids in the future, is a tall, rock-climbing Libra, and loves rom-coms with vegan pizzas on Tuesdays just as much as you do. Bumble knows that you know exactly what's right for you. So whatever it is you're looking for, Bumble's features can help you find it. Date now on Bumble.
You may know you're listening to this show along the Marketing Podcast Network, but did you know there are other great shows on MPN to help your business? Christy Hyler hosts a fantastic podcast called Own It. Christy, tell us more about the show.
Own It is all about celebrating women and non-binary advertising agency owners. We talk about buying out of the Boys Club of Advertising because less than 1% of ad agencies are owned by women.
And where can people subscribe?
You can find the podcast at untilyouownit.com. We're also on the Marketing Podcast Network at marketingpodcast.net. And of course, you can subscribe wherever you get your podcasts.
You heard her. Go subscribe.
Welcome to On Brand, a podcast for brand builders by brand builders. Here's your host, Nick Westergaard of Brand Driven Digital.
Hey, brand builders. Have we got a show for you? This week's guest is Sarah Torvill. Sarah is the CEO and founder of Media Frenzy Global, a global PR and marketing agency that builds brands for innovative and disruptive companies. Over the last 10 years, Sarah has helped Fortune 500 brands build and generate distinctive brand messaging and meaningful media coverage for companies that are disrupting in their industry. Prior to Media Frenzy Global, Sarah led corporate communications for Motorola across Europe, the Middle East, and Africa. And while marketing director at WorldSpan, she launched the world's first online travel booking site, Expedia. Sarah, welcome to On Brand.
Thank you, Nick. It's great to be here. Thank you.
So one thing that jumps out at me in your bio, we talk with brand builders that work in all sorts of different types of organizations, different types of agencies. You specialize, your work at Media Frenzy, in brands that are disruptive. How did you arrive at what might be kind of a disruptive type of business?
Mm-hmm. Well, I've been in technology, been working kind of for technology companies for the last 20 years when I was at Motorola and at WorldSpan with Expedia, and then since then running the company for 12 years. And I mean, the reality is, you know, there's a lot of brands out there which tend to think that they are, you know, they are technology companies and that they are innovative and disruptive. But the reality is that many of them want to be innovative and disruptive, but actually don't know how to become that. And so through the work that we have done, and through the kind of just the range of different projects we've been involved in, we've, you know, because we start working with many of these companies from the outset, we really do help them to kind of strategize from a marketing perspective of, you know, how do we, you know, how do we take what they seem to think that they're doing, which is kind of, developing proprietary technology. How do we kind of take the essence of that and then tell that story to the world where it shows how they are innovating and disrupting in their industry? And so we just had a lot of projects where we work with brands who literally, you know, were creating very, very unique technology. And what we found is the brands where they had unique technology and we were telling their story, the media, you know, the appetite from the media for those type of brands is significant. Whereas when you have a brand which is, you know, perhaps an IT services company, and maybe there's more services than there is technology, telling that story and getting the media excited is a much harder thing to do. So we just found that our niche really is in really helping those innovative, disruptive brands literally kind of strategize from the very outset of how they're going to kind of get this story told. And how they're going to create a kind of a buzz and a media frenzy around it. So it just felt the right, you know, we've had some great success and it felt right for us. And it's proven to be very good.
Well, there you segued into a second question. You just said to create a media frenzy, and my ears mm-hmm. perked up, and I thought, hey, that's the name of Sarah's business. So, what is at the risk of? Well, I'll just ask a leading question. What is a media frenzy, and why should someone want to create one or have one created around them?
Well, I mean, I first experienced creating a media frenzy actually a while ago. I was working on, there was a company called Vlingo. They were the first voice recognition company. Yeah. This is way before Siri. And they chose my agency to basically launch them in four markets in Europe. I think we were in France, Germany, UK, and Spain. And we really, because they allowed us, they trusted in us to do a range of things for them. So we were doing... Basically, we were doing an influencer program for them. We were doing a media program for them. And when I say influencer, it was more kind of bloggers than it was influencers like we might know today. So it was kind of a blogger program, a PR program, and an industry analyst program as well, which is, you know, analysts at the core of a lot of technology communication strategy. So they trusted in us to do that. And what we saw happening, it was really, really interesting. We saw a ripple effect starting, first of all, because we were engaging, we were basically getting these bloggers to basically trial the technology. They, you know, we gave them the device, they had the application on there, they went away, they used the device for 2 weeks. They obviously, you know, filmed themselves using the Vlingo application, and obviously they started sharing it. So that was happening. At the same time, we were doing a lot of media relations work, and we were getting some really great coverage for them in national titles. And then analyst relations was working simultaneously. And then just the perfect storm happened when the Wall Street Journal called me late at night, because I was based in London at the time. And they basically said to me, we've seen all these product reviews. We've been reading some coverage about Vlingo. I really want to speak to an analyst. I really want to find out their perspective from a wider context. And so kind of things were starting to join together, like the ripple effect was happening where influencers were influencing influencers. And what started, and it was amazing. And literally we were creating, I mean, we had the Vlingo got so many downloads in those first few months because of the frenzy that which was created all online with bloggers, with influencers, with the media, with the industry analysts. And when they correlated together, literally there was, it was like there was sparks flying. It was so exciting. And the coverage was significant. So that was the very beginning stages of how I was very involved in that. And I was thinking, like, you know, when things correlate and they work well together, and when an agency really is given the keys to do so many things and does them very well, literally that's what can be created online, a true frenzy. So that's really where it came from. And to this very day, that's really at the heart of what we do at this company, at Media Frenzy. So.
Well, and what's interesting there is that so much of the online work that you were trying to do, all of that that frenzy, led to the Wall Street Journal coverage. So it really seems like a grassroots something that built into having some pretty significant traditional results using. Mm-hmm. Newer media, newer programs, influencers.
Yeah, definitely. You're exactly right. You know, and to this very day, when we run programs, we, you know, we always try and look at, you know, what is going to create that frenzy? Like, is it because everything, you know, unless if you're running a PR program, for example, you've got to have some pretty compelling content if you're really going to get people to take notice. You know, you've got to be, so we try and look beyond just very traditional ways of doing PR or traditional ways of kind of 2D storytelling. And we try and take the approach with everything that we do. And actually, our new mantra this year is to go there. Like, what does it take to literally take a brand there? You know, how do you take a brand there and create a media frenzy? And you don't do it by just doing everything in a traditional way. You have to be creative. And that might be traditional media as well as online media. It might be immersive storytelling content like virtual reality. It can be a whole series of things. The, you know, obviously not just trying to be creative for creative sake, but literally thinking what is going to be the best way to literally make this brand, you know, just drive significant interest over a short period of time. So the media frenzy lives on, even though our PR mantra right now is to go there. So it's exciting.
Well, it's interesting. You talk about some of the different pathways, to follow the metaphor of going there, that we have spent so long focusing on how do we get away from some of the traditional pathways, the traditional tools, and build things in a new way using new technology. And what I think we're about now is, now we've gone so far to things new, now we need to look at these kind of strange combinations that we can make, but because they're strange in their approach and their makeup, they stand out in an incredibly noisy marketplace that we all find ourselves in.
Yes. Yeah. No, it's a really good point. And I suppose that kind of leads me on to that's exactly what we have been doing with the work around the Coop brand. So Coop is a brand owned by Ryder, and Ryder is a global trucking company. And, you know, Ryder launched a startup within their company called Coop. And, you know, they wanted to work with an agency which literally knew how to really work in an environment of like the gig economy, the whole sharing economy. They wanted to make sure that the agency that they chose could work in this new world of media and of this whole sharing economy. So we were selected. We were very, very, you know, happy to be selected to be their agency. But that whole effort, and obviously there's a lot that we did for them, was exactly what you just said back then, which is, it was a combination of, it's like, you cannot, if you really are trying to be a brand that, whether, you know, creates a media frenzy or goes there, you have to kind of, you know, you need to kind of get on the level of where your customers are. So that, and that might not all be a complete digital process. There may be some real kind of grassroots, humanized kind of marketing opportunities, like events and just kind of festivals. And it's really trying to find that combination, which really kind of positions a brand correctly with their audience, looking like a new media company, but also getting to the grassroots and getting on the same level of your customers. So, there's definitely a fine balance as to what needs to be incorporated into that whole brand marketing strategy.
Well, you brought up events, and to me, that's such an interesting space, because talk about what might be one of the oldest mediums out there, just getting together, taking your offering out to the people. And I think that, you know, I've seen data showing that it's where marketers are investing more. And I think there's so much information, so much, we've moved what we're doing and where we're doing it. And we can do so much online now that now, once we have all of those questions answered, we still crave this interaction as well. And that's where I think thinking about even your online brand, how you can, I'm going to use it again, get there.
And I get there.
Exactly. There, right? I see. It's an idea with legs, but how you can take your online brand into an offline setting where someone can really interact and have a meaningful experience.
Yeah, no, I agree. I mean, some of the things, again, we did for Coop were, you know, it was actually refreshing. I love the fact that they embraced this whole model of, you know, humanizing their brand and getting on the level of their customers. And so they, you know, when they did events, they would do, you know, customer appreciation events. First of all, they wanted to thank some of their newest customers who'd taken that risk very early on whilst they were, you know, the platform was still new. And, you know, we did a really kind of really, really nice event at Top Golf here in Atlanta, but it wasn't just, you know, go play golf. It was quite a spectacle of really, you know, we did Coop 66 cocktails, and we had wonderful food, and we had a DJ and tents, and there was this fire, and it was just everything about it. And it was literally, you know, Coop thinking like, you know, we want to say thank you to the customers which believed in us early on, because without them, they wouldn't be where they are today. And I love that about them. And when we were there, I mean, these guys, you know, because this was a trucking it was a trucking, like it was the Airbnb for trucking. That's basically what Cooper's about. You know, these guys, these customers turned up in their trucks. It was perfect. And we got out and we videoed them in their trucks pulling up. And we got some great footage of these great truck drivers, you know, individual business owners, you know, small business owners and big business owners, all wanting to share trucks with each other. It was just kind of really great footage of this kind of, you know, this trucking community. It literally was a community. And that's what Coop and a lot of these sharing platforms are creating. They're creating community. And, you know, the way to kind of get the buzz and tell that story is to allow your community to tell that story for you. And that was the real essence of the whole Coop marketing strategy, is like give these customers a voice to help humanize the Coop experience and make other truck drivers think, well, you know what, they're doing it, I can do this too. And it was exceptional to be involved in that.
Well, and the human connection there too, bringing people together, I think is something that is in a lot of ways a new role that brands, that agencies find themselves in. And it's, you know, it's something that has, that's, you know, hard to demonstrate on an ROI dashboard, but it's mm-hmm. something that has incredible value in a mm-hmm. day and age where so much is changing.
Yes. No, I agree. I mean, again, just, not without wishing to go on too much about the Coop, but I suppose I treat them as a good benchmark for how to do things. Yeah. When you're a new brand and you're part of a legacy brand, but you're trying to kind of stand alone. But they, you know, they did even things like street festivals. I mean, who would have thought that a B2B trucking company would be at the grassroots of a food and wine festival and a street festival? But the reality is actually they were trying to appeal to these business owners who owned, you know, trucks. And so they were delivering food. But what they did is they just made themselves, at the end of the day, we want to work with brands that we can connect with. We don't want there to be any, we don't want the brand to feel superior to who we are. We want to feel that, you know, we want the brand to feel like there really is a mutual connection with their customers. And so, what better way to do that than to serve barbecue? You know, that's what they did. They set up a barbecue pit and served barbecue to these truck drivers. And like, literally, let's just have a good time and let's engage with each other and have a conversation. And that's, again, that was just a nice, you know, serving barbecue at some of these festivals was a really fun way to kind of get people excited and wanting to know more.
Well, yeah, and I think too, there's so many of these things that I think you touched on in this example, but in elsewhere too, where we'd think, well, why are we there? Whether it's a, you know, somewhere where we wouldn't think that, you know, this is a place for our brand. Maybe it's up or down market from where we think we are, but looking at where the people are that we want to find is so very important. And especially with, again, going to come back to the drum that I beat often, is that it's so hard to stand out everywhere else. All of these wonderful platforms where you can segment people down. But if you can, especially talking about that business owner group that is extremely busy, is, you know, looking for a meaningful, special experience like that, what can you do that's a little bit different?
Mm-hmm. Exactly. Yeah. I mean, that's what we try and think about all the time, is how do we make something different? And, you know, it used to be a few years ago, if you put up a nice photo booth, that was seen as different. That's not different anymore. Everybody's doing photo booths. It's like, we're kind of over the photo booths. It's like, you know, we do a lot right now. We've partnered with an agency here in Atlanta around, you know, holographic storytelling and virtual reality and augmented reality. And even though that's becoming a bit of a buzzword, because literally it's, you know, they work perfect for events, especially those traditional conferences where everybody's got a, you know, 10x20 booth. You know, having a video on your stand and handing out brochures doesn't cut it. It's like, you know, or having some swag to give away. It's like, how can you bring your solution and your offering to those people right there and then, where they literally are immersed in understanding how you can help solve their problems. You know, and we find that the 2D is, it's great to have those brochures there, and a video can be helpful, but there's nothing better than actually an immersive experience. And that's something that we, you know, with AT&T, we've, you know, again, our partners work with AT&T, and it's something we've, you know, just been, you know, really kind of excited about. They created this whole 360-degree virtual reality room at a traditional trade show. You know, they actually took people into a room. It was a smart city room, and they allowed people to really see what it means when AT&T talks about a smart city for Atlanta. Now you literally can experience it. So, you know, that's obviously an extreme way to go. But something else that we've been doing at Media Frenzy is we launched the first holographic press release. You know, how do you go beyond, again, just a traditional press release, but actually, you know, get the CEO talking and actually being this hologram, which you can see through your phone. And there, the storytelling is happening in a 3D environment. And so, you know, there's lots going on in that space right now.
Well, and I think the tricky part in all of this is, you noted with the whether it's the photo booths, or we look for what is a unique experience, and then ironically everyone makes it cease to be unique by doing it, and then everybody's got a photo booth and everything else. So it is tricky. It seems like moving to, as we go there, I did it again. I'm wearing it out. I think.
Love it. No, I love it. I love that, Nick.
But it's really kind of a chase to get there, to get to a place where something different and meaningful is happening, because it seems like we have to at least try to lead the pack, because there is a pack, and everybody's going to chase us down, catch up, and be doing the same thing soon enough.
Yeah, soon enough that will happen. I still think VR and AR, it's such early days. It's amazing how many, most brands aren't doing it, put it that way. And a small percentage are, and you're right, in over the years that will change, and then we'll, you know, there'll be other experiences that we're creating, and hopefully even then we'll still revert back to the events. We'll still revert back to more traditional, and we'll correlate them together. So it's not just everything kind of to be so progressive that you can't, you know, that it's only for the really, you know, the really big brands, and actually smaller companies can start to kind of try things and, you know, and have a combination of different disciplines within their marketing armor. So, but you're right. It's like every new technology innovation that, you know, it starts to, you know, everyone starts to use it, and then it gets stale. And we're looking for something else. So, but we're excited right now around VR and AR, and we're actually working on a big launch of a brand currently. And you know, the only way they want to go is the virtual reality way. So you know, it's starting to kick in, and it's exciting.
So since that's where that's really what's next for so many. If there are brand builders out there listening and thinking, oh, I'm not doing anything, much less even thinking about VR, AR. What would you tell someone in terms of where to start?
I think it comes down to what, you know, who are their customers they're trying to sell to, and where do they spend their time, and what do they care about? Because the demographics of who you're targeting kind of dictate how sophisticated you would go with your content marketing strategy. So I think that's really the place to start. And I would say, actually, beyond anything else, and again, it amazes me how many brands sometimes want to bypass this component. But, you know, you can do all the most wonderful things in the world and use all the best technology, but if your message literally doesn't resonate, then we may as well shut up shop, because it doesn't mean anything. So, you know, I would tell a brand who might be feeling overwhelmed and think they've got to do all these things, it's like, you know what, get your message right, because actually you can still be so effective if your message is right and you know where your customers are, you know, that you know where they spend time and you know what they care about and you know how you solve their problems. You can use, you know, simple email marketing to really kind of create some resonance with them. You can do some clever social advertising at a very low budget to kind of really kind of, you know, find these people and offer them something special, something which is going to get them excited. So, you know, the message at the end of the day, and then how you tell that story, you know, even if, again, without wanting to go down an expensive budget route, but just the words that you choose. I'm a lover of words. I love words more than anything. Actually, I have people in my team who are really good at graphics and creative, and that's great, and I need them. But me, I love the written word still to this very day. So create some very compelling language and put a personality behind it, and you can have success that way.
Well, and I love your point, your cautionary tale, whether it is something new like VR, AR, whether it is a classic format like email marketing. If your message mm-hmm. isn't figured out, you're spinning your wheels. So mm-hmm. I think to your point about being a word person, I'm one of those too. And I think people need to figure out what their words are before they step up to some of these new tools as well.
Yeah. No, I agree. 100%.
Sarah, as we start to wrap up, what mm-hmm. is a brand that has made you smile recently?
Well, there's just been so much talk, obviously, around the Super Bowl. And so that kind of really kind of thought, you know, I've been looking at loads of different ads recently and really kind of dissecting them. And the brand, which, and actually thinking about it, I don't actually know if this brand did feature in the Super Bowl, so excuse me if I said that incorrectly, but the Tumi brand actually is a brand which is making me smile recently. I mean, Tumi, when I first met my husband, he had a Tumi bag, and I remember thinking, oh my gosh, like, this guy is out of my league. It's like, I do not have a Tumi bag, cannot afford a Tumi bag. And I didn't know much about Tumi. I didn't know much about the Tumi brand, but they're doing some really clever things right now with some very creative artists. And they're kind of telling really authentic stories, going to the roots of where these artists came from and taking their Tumi bag with them. It's a very clever marketing and PR strategy that they have, but it's kind of getting to the heart of what, you know, Tumi is, you know, again, I didn't know this until I started watching these ads, but Tumi is meant to be a reflection of your home. Because when you travel a lot, you know, if you really do have an extensive travel schedule, whether you're a business person or whether you're an artist, you know, a singer, songwriter, the reality is you spend a lot of the time taking clothes out of your luggage, and it's meant to feel really good quality and really meant to make you feel like, you know, you're at home wherever you are. And Tumi have done a really clever job at getting to the heart of authentic storytelling, and I love it. So that's one. But I have one more, if I could just share one more, because this one made me smile so much this week, which is what Pepsi did this week with PR. Pepsi did something which I was just close to my heart in terms of a very kind of caring attitude, is that, you know, considering Pepsi was here in Atlanta, they were the main sponsor of the Super Bowl, and, you know, Atlanta is the HQ of Coca-Cola. Pepsi wrote this wonderful letter, like really beautiful letter, and they sent it to the AJC, and they wanted to thank Coca-Cola for being the most amazing sport at allowing Pepsi to come into their city, sponsor, you know, a major competition in the heart of Atlanta where Coke is and where it was born. And they wanted to thank them for their Southern hospitality. And it was just, you know, it was great. Like, yeah, why can't two brands who compete day to day come together at times like this? And they actually did come together, and they actually did something to, they fed a lot of children in the city. They did really something to help people struggling in the city of Atlanta, and they came together to do that. So that, to me, made me smile.
That is a great smile. I love that, and a great example of of just the why couldn't they? And yet it's something that would be, it'd be a hard place for a lot of folks to get to mentally. But hats off to them for doing that. Sarah, where can folks go to learn more about who you are and what you do at Media Frenzy Global?
Yeah, so, I mean, we've just launched our new website this week. We're really excited about it. So I'd love everyone to look at our new website, because it's a true reflection of who we are and how we help brands. So it's mediafrenzyglobal.com. That is the best place to go. And if anybody really does want to email me, I love to hear from people, which is Sarah with an H at MediaFrenzyGlobal.com.
Sarah with an H at MediaFrenzyGlobal.com. We will link up to all of that in our show notes. Thank you, Sarah, for joining us on Brand.
Thank you very much for having me, Nick. I appreciate it.
And a reminder, if you like something that you heard on this episode or another, or if you have a question you'd like one of our guests to answer, let me know using the hashtag OnBrandPodcast, and you may just hear your thoughts right here on the show. You can subscribe to the show via iTunes, Stitcher, and TuneIn. Speaking of iTunes, if you like what you're hearing, show us some Southern or Midwestern hospitality and give us a rating and review there. Help others find the show. Until next week, I'm Nick Westergaard, and I'll see you on the internet.
This has been the On Brand Podcast, presented by Brand Driven Digital. For show notes, links, and more, go to onbrandpodcast.com. Remember, you can subscribe to the show and leave a rating and review at iTunes and Stitcher. Thanks for listening.
This podcast is heard along the Marketing Podcast Network. For more great marketing podcasts, visit marketingpodcasts.net.